IVM.
Welcome to Police Chowki, a special limited series on your favorite public policy podcast, All Things Policy. This series will take you behind the khaki uniform, beyond the flashing red beacon, and into the heart of the functioning of the Indian police forces. We cast a critical eye on the role and function of the police in the Indian democracy, from the silent persistence of paperwork and meticulous investigation to risky counterterrorism efforts and policing in conflict zones. We explore the need for police reform and accountability in the system. Each episode brings you a comprehensive exploration of a unique facet of policing, illuminated by the insights of a former IPS officer who has lived the life behind the badge. So join us every Monday morning as we take you into the complex world of Police Chowki.
Hello and welcome to the new episode of Police Chowki. I'm your host, Shri Krishna Upadhyaya. And today we'll be taking a deep dive into Section 144 of the Criminal Procedure Code or CRP. And I'm sure many of our listeners would be aware what Section 144 is about. 144 has been imposed, or curfew lag gaya is how many Indians have come to label the utilization of powers conferred by Section 144 on the police, or where the police is empowered to suspend civil liberties in the interest of maintaining public order. As per 144, district magistrate or a subdivisional magistrate or any other executive magistrate who is empowered by the state government, which is typically DCP and above in the case of police, or in some states even ACP and above, can issue an order under 144 for immediate prevention or speedy remedy, where the police officer or the district magistrate can direct any person to abstain from a certain act or to take certain actions with respect to property under that person's possession or management. And for what purpose can 144 orders be issued? Well, as per the section, the order can be issued for the purposes of preventing or tending to prevent any obstruction, annoyance, injury to any other person lawfully employed, or a danger to human life, health or safety, or a disturbance of the public tranquility, or a riot or an affray. This order can be directed at a particular individual or groups or the public at large. As you can see from the grounds that I just read out, the powers under 144 are quite wide, and the reasons for which it can be issued are also quite broad. Now, this order under 144 typically lasts up to 2 months, but it can be extended up to 6 months by the government. And disobeying a 144 order is punishable offense under the Indian Penal Code, with punishment which can go up to 1 month's imprisonment or can even go up to 6 months in certain cases, and of course a nominal penalty as well. As one may have guessed by now, Section 144 directly impinges on all kinds of civil liberties, constitutionally protected freedoms, right from right to your speech and expression, right to movement, assembly, association, right to trade, business, occupation, and of course your right to privacy. And that is why overuse or misuse of Section 144 is concerning. Today we'll be dissecting a recent empirical study conducted by four researchers from Delhi, Brinda Bhandari, Abhinav Shekri, Natasha Maheshwari and Madhav Agarwal, who have scrutinized the Section 144 orders issued by the Delhi police over a year-long period in 2021. The report, which is linked to the show notes, is titled The Use and Misuse of Section 144 CRPC, an empirical analysis of all the orders passed in 2021 in Delhi. And they have taken painstaking steps to analyze over 5,400 Section 144 orders which were issued in Delhi in this year, out of the total of 6,100 that were passed in that year. So just to characterize that, that's about 17 orders a day across the 15 police districts of New Delhi. This report has also identified some alarming patterns in how this extraordinary power vested in police is being administered by the officers in charge. And in fact, the report also shines light on the absence of procedural safeguard and a tendency to impose positive obligations through the directions issued under Section 144. Our discussion today will critically explore these findings of the report and their implications of civil liberties and governance. And before that, let me stop this long introduction and welcome our guest on the show, Mr. Javed Ahmed. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Ahmed.
Good afternoon, Sri. Yeah, thank you very much for having me today. And it's a very interesting topic that we are going to discuss. And I look forward to that.
Right. So let's jump right into it, right? So one of the startling findings from the study is that it found 25% of orders under CRPC, Section 144 of CRPC, pertain to installation of CCTV cameras. And 43% of the orders were related to regulating businesses by making registration of records compulsory. In stark contrast to all this, only 1.5% of the orders dealt with preventing unlawful assemblies, which are typically known as curfew orders, where people gathering, more than five people are prohibited from gathering or conducting an assembly in public. And again, basically the findings of the study go against the popular perception that Section 144 is a tool which is used for public order by imposing curfews and banning unlawful assemblies. Instead, an entire CCTV surveillance system is being set up in New Delhi by the use of such orders, where private players starting from restaurants, hotels, pubs, liquor vents, etc., have been ordered by the police to set up CCTV cameras. And of course, they've also been asked to share the footage of this camera with the police as and when the need arises. And all of this has been done under Section 144. So this is typically known as function creep, where the use of Section 144 seems to have gone far beyond the original purpose. And I want to bring you in, Mr. Ahmed, here, because as someone who has been on the enforcement side, why is this disparity? Why is something which is meant for controlling a nuisance or apprehended danger to the public order being used in such a manner?
Thank you, Nursery. Let me first say that the study itself is a very interesting study in the sense that the researchers have sifted through huge amounts of data and come up with certain conclusions. Obviously, they are individuals who are practicing law or are knowledgeable about law, and they are people who are concerned about the violation of civil rights of individuals and citizens of the country. But I must say that the findings of this study are limited to their analysis of data relating to Delhi. Therefore, to extrapolate that to the whole country would not be particularly fair. And anyone who's looking at this data should keep that in mind. Having said that, now the question is, why is it that provision of law, which is meant basically for ensuring public tranquility, is being used for example, you talked about the regulation of CCTV cameras, etc. My own assessment is that the absence of new laws and new regulations to deal with the changing environment in which law and order is to be maintained, crime is to be prevented, is one major reason. Obviously, when laws were enacted, or this particular law was enacted, there were no CCTV cameras and there was no concept of such technology being available. And now, ideally, the state should have responded to the change in the environment, including the introduction of new technology, and tried to enact a law that would take care of the concerns of privacy of the individuals, and at the same time, the requirement for the law enforcement agencies to have data about what is happening in a restaurant or on the street, etc. The first thing that has happened and then is that the absence of this kind of legislation has kind of forced the hand of the police to use this omnibus law, which was meant for a totally different purpose, and stretch it to bring in CCTV camera footage and related matters into Section 144. Definitely, Section 144 was not meant for this, but as I said, it's been stretched because there was a vacuum, and this vacuum was sought to be filled. This, what I'm saying, is the view of a law enforcer. I'm sure a person who deals in law will have a different perspective, but it has to be, both the perspectives should be in front of the listeners, and they should understand what are the circumstances in which these orders were passed by the Delhi police.
Right. And I agree with you on the point that the lawmaking machinery has not caught up with the current times, and there is a vacuum. I think some states have in fact filled this vacuum. From what I remember, I think states like Karnataka and Telangana have passed specific legislations which deal with installation of CCTV cameras in public and so on. But in Delhi, that's sadly that
I'm aware of that, yes.
Yes, and sadly in Delhi, that has not been the case, and the police has resorted to 144 orders. In fact, one quarter of the orders under 144 relate to installation of CCTVs. But there is far sort of like insidious trend other than this, which is that, you know, another 43% of the total orders are actually about enforcing certain positive directions on members of the public. For example, the study notes that, you know, and I quote from the study, Section 144 is being used to issue a range of directives to regulate a variety of businesses and services, often through directives to compulsorily maintain a record of employees, visitors, customers, and follow stipulated procedures such as KYC norms prescribed by the RBI. In fact, a staggering 3,552 orders were issued to mandate landlords, property owners, factory owners to furnish details regarding tenants, laborers, servants before providing them with accommodation. And there are also some outliers, such as, you know, some 300 odd orders were against the flying of hot air balloons, unmanned aerial vehicles, drones, and so on. And some 179 orders were, you know, prohibiting use of this manja, a particular manja used for flying kites, which can be very sharp and cut people. And which is why police has resorted to 144 to prohibit that. The problem here is 144 in its essence is prohibitory in nature. It says that, you know, you can restrain a particular member of the public from doing a certain act. Here, however, the police have taken this position and have imposed all kinds of positive obligations and entered all realms of governance. For example, you know, they have mandated that people who rent a room or take a temporary job or even courier services, cyber cafe, etc., have to maintain records. All second-hand sellers have to maintain records of whom they are selling the goods to. And all of this seems to be done under this idea that, you know, it might have some law and order implication. There might be a criminal engaging in all these activities. So the police must ensure that the actors involved must keep records so that it might be in aid of criminal investigation at some point in future. If I guess that is the thinking behind the police actions. But could you sort of throw light on how does this actually play out? Because in practice, are these orders even being followed, first of all? And whether, you know, is this relevant for law and order investigation and law, maintaining law and order and criminal investigation? And if so, how relevant? And if at all this has to be done, why is Section 44 again being resorted to by the police, which does not have the legal basis or legal sanction for doing all this?
Yeah, you have to understand that all these orders which we are discussing today are being issued in Delhi. Now, mm-hmm. New Delhi, as you know, is an ever-expanding metropolis, the capital of our nation. Huge numbers of migrants from all across the country are coming there. People who are, you know, nameless, anonymous when they land up in Delhi, and they are, you know, taking up residence as a tenant or in a hotel. As a customer, there are a large number of people who are selling and buying, used cars, used vehicles, and similar activities which are unregulated are going on. Now, the link with criminal activities of people who have anonymity, people who are dealing in unregulated business of selling and buying of two-wheelers and four-wheelers, the link is obvious. There are many, many cases where, you know, unknown person comes to Delhi or to any metropolis for that matter, takes a place on rent, does something criminal or, you know, malafide, you know, buys a bike or a car for the purpose and then disappears. So it is in this background that the police is resorting to the use of Section 144 to try and regulate the unregulated sector of tenancy or of sale and purchase of secondhand goods, including cars and other things. I am not trying to say that Section 144 was meant for this. Right. I am not at all trying to say that this is the best way that the police should have gone about it. But in the context of what is happening and in the context of the availability or non-availability of certain laws for specifically for this purpose and for the purpose essentially of crime prevention, these measures have been taken. You can definitely say that it's a stretch of the provisions of Section 144, but to ipso facto impute malafide to it, I would not go to that extent.
Right. And I just wanted to know from you, how has the experience been in Uttar Pradesh? Now, Delhi, of course, is unique in the sense as a national capital. There's a lot of in and out migration and so on. So some of these concerns might be more prominent in Delhi. But just in terms of the issuance of Section 144 orders in, say, Uttar Pradesh, if a study is conducted, say, tomorrow for the period of last 1 year, do you think the findings would be similar or would you think they would be different or how different would it be?
To my understanding, and if I recall correctly, the use of 144 in UP for things like CCTV and other things, or for the sale and purchase of vehicles, or for tenancy, etc., I don't recall any such order being issued. If at all it has been issued, it's a one-off. But definitely, Section 144 has been used very liberally and often without the full application of mind that the law requires for maintenance of public order. especially with regard to festivals where processions are an essential part of it, or large congregations are an essential part of festivals. There are a huge number of festivals and melas in different parts of UP, and regulation of crowd becomes an important aspect of it. And also for preventing caste tensions or communal tensions, which unfortunately UP has seen in substantial numbers over the years. So it is more for these purposes that 144 has been used in UP. But with the changing environment, with the changing technology, I would not be surprised if officers in UP also kind of catch up with Delhi or with some other metropolis and try to use 144 for the more innovative purposes, which may raise the eyebrows of the legal luminaries.
Right. And I believe, like in Ahmedabad also, I remember reading about it that, you know, some orders have been in place for the longest time imaginable. These orders are issued and they typically pertain to unlawful assembly, and they are renewed almost automatically after their term is expired. And I really want to get into this aspect of routinization of 144. But before that, I just wanted to know from you off the top of your head, what is, at least in your experience, what has been the consequence of violating these 144 orders? Does the police take them seriously? Does the police launch investigation, prosecution, and so on? Or is it just one other charge which is slapped on a person who already faces criminal action? How does it work?
See, the penalty for violation of 144 is provided in Section 188. That is a non-cognizable section. So now it's being non-cognizable, the penalty, I don't remember offhand what it is, but it would be a very, you know, small or a short period of incarceration, if at all, or a small penalty. The more important thing for the law and order point of view is that it gives it's an enabling provision for the police, so that in case someone was violating the 144 order, then the police would be authorized legally, would have an umbrella of legal authority for dispersing that assembly, or for maybe even arresting that person or detaining that person for a few hours and preventing him from doing what he wants to do, which in the minds of the police officer concerned will affect public tranquility. So it's not so much to arrest someone or to charge someone for something which is very serious. It's just enabling provision, which is a tool in the hands of the police. You are right that, and I mentioned this earlier, that there's an element of routinization of Section 144 orders, the kind of application of mind that is required by law in each instance where 144 is to be promulgated. It probably does not happen, but it's not that it provides the police with huge draconian powers. It definitely gives the police some authorization to disperse assemblies or to prevent something from happening or prevent people from gathering or saying something. To see beyond that, in all cases, I would have reservations on that.
Right. So you're saying that essentially police uses as a tactic to detain protests during any disturbance to public order and so on. And essentially this is a tool in the hands of police to combat public disturbance. So having said that, let's look at this other aspect of Section 144, which is, you know, after all, it's an extraordinary power, which is meant to be exercised with due care and caution, which is at least not the case in Delhi, as we have seen, because these are routinely issued for all kinds of things. But the provision itself provides for certain checks and balances, right? And there are two important ones. One is that, you know, the orders can be enforced for only 2 months, and it can be extended up to 6 months by the state government if it requires. After the period elapses, the emergency is said to be over, at least in paper, and the order also ceases to exist. But what has been the Delhi experience is that, you know, these orders are routine, they're cyclostyle. In fact, they're copy-paste versions of each other, and they keep getting extended for a long duration of time. So this check and balance is no longer in effect. And the second sort of safeguard within Section 144 is that any person who is affected by a 144 order, because if you remember, the order can be issued both against an individual or a group or against public at large. So if an affected party can actually file a motion to get this order reviewed by the issuing authority. However, the experience in Delhi at least has been that, you know, these orders are not addressed to a particular person at all, but they're addressed to a general public, which means, you know, it's very difficult to find that one affected party who's going to file this motion and get it reviewed and so on. And in fact, even the publication of this order is not done very well. There is an online repository which, you know, does not function very well. The orders themselves say that, you know, these can be pasted in some government office and that constitutes publication on the walls of some government office. So this is essentially like diverting the spirit of 144, because whatever minimum safeguard we had under the provision has been lost. And the other fact being that when the constitutionality of this provision was challenged before the Supreme Court, the court said that, you know, look, these safeguards exist, so it's fine. This extraordinary power can be allowed to stay on the statute books.
Stay tuned to All Things Policy. We'll be right back after a short commercial break.
So in this sort of characterization, Mr. Ahmed, I wanted to know, has, of course, I, at least from Delhi experience, it seems that there is a lack of procedural safeguards, but I wanted to know your view on it, because are there any other checks and balances that the public might not be aware of, or is there a need for more procedural oversight?
Yeah, the promulgation of 144 has been the subject of a number of litigations right up to the Supreme Court. The latest example is the Anuradha Bhasin case, in which the Supreme Court has very clearly laid down that 144 cannot be used to curb democratic rights. In the past, in the Ramdev matter in Ramlila Ground in Delhi, again, the court has said that 144 should be used in a matter of urgency. It should be used as a temporary remedy. It should be used only for public good. It should be used for larger public interest and all that. So the contours of why and how 144 can be used has been very clearly enunciated by the various courts, including the Honorable Supreme Court. Now, in practice, what is happening is that the police officers who are empowered, in this case, the ACPs of Delhi, have not, it seems, not applied their mind in each of the individual specific cases while issuing the orders. And there seems to be some amount of routineness with which the matter has been, with which the order has been passed. It is not the best case scenario, definitely. And an order which has the potential to curb civil rights of citizens is something that should be taken much more seriously by the police. And I'm sure after this study has come out, the senior police formations in Delhi and other places would be having a very serious look at what is definitely an area of concern for every law-abiding police officer.
Right. And this sort of takes me back to the conversation we had in the first episode of this podcast series, where you essentially said that failures of a lot of other government departments has led to the slack being picked up by the police. Now, for example, if tomorrow there's a court order, or in whatever way, Section 144 is not used by the police for the kind of things they have done so far, I think they'll just find another way, some other provision, some other loophole in which they can continue issuing such or similar orders, right? Unless that legislative loophole is not filled, the police ultimately has to do the job. So they will end up finding another provision to do something similar.
Yeah, well, good that you asked this question. Last time we had talked about the ethos of the police, and I'll go back to that. You see, the ethos of the police is still that order has to be maintained. And when you talk about law and order, you expect that order would be maintained within the parameters provided by law. Unfortunately, what has happened is that because there is no public accountability in that sense for the police functioning, and they are answerable not to the public, but to only, you know, those who are in positions of power. Therefore, the importance is given to maintaining order, and cutting corners on the law part is often resorted to, because those who are liable to ask them will not ask them, or they will acquiesce in a sense to this cutting of corners on the law side as long as order is maintained. So this ethos, this system ethos, needs to change. And till such time as this happens, the infringement of civil rights by police functionaries in almost a routine manner, to quote you, to paraphrase you, sorry, would continue to happen. And this is why it is important that the accountability mechanisms in the police department across the country are reviewed and more strict guidelines are issued so that the respect for the common man and his civil rights, whether it is of speech or expression or assembly or trade or movement, they are not infringed in a routine manner. Definitely, there will be conditions and circumstances in which there will be a need for public good to infringe or to temporarily, issue some orders. But it should not be done in a routine manner. And as I said before, this ethos will change. Hopefully now with this study, people will, shine a light on the inadequacies of the police functioning and find better solutions.
Right. So one other angle which I was thinking of was that of certain kind of moral policing, which comes with Section 144 as well. For example, some orders have been identified in this report, which, pertain to a banning of sale of tobacco in hookah bars, because apparently the youth of this nation is wasting away their precious life on tobacco in such places. So the police has used this provision to ban that. And similarly, there were some cases in Delhi and elsewhere as well, where kids were using whitener liquids as some sort of intoxication. And in order to combat this, the police has issued a 144 order which bans the sale of whiteners to children below 18. And there are many, many such examples, and I could go on. But the larger point here is there are a lot of social problems, and we perhaps do not know exactly what kind of policy interventions will be needed to solve them. But all of them have been treated as a law and order issue, and the police have been using 144 somewhat in an extra legal manner to curb this. And the other angle being just imposition of these positive obligations on businesses, right? And in India, there are lots of businesses, all small and big and large and extra large. So the point being, these positive obligations on businesses come with cost. It increases their running costs, and they will have to comply with this or face criminal action. And in fact, it impinges on their ease of doing business and so on. So essentially, some problem regarding regulation of businesses is being sought to be solved using this extraordinary power. So in this sort of context, is there more role for departmental oversight? In the sense, I want to know from you, how is a 144 order reviewed? Is it even reviewed by a higher authority after it's been passed? Are there internal mechanisms within the police, or how can it be done?
So to answer your last question first, as I said before, 144 orders have often been issued with less application of mind than what is required, not only by law, but also by all tenets of good governance. And I'm sure this will change once this discussion is and debate is out in the public. Now, going back to the issue about, a hookah bar or whiteners, these are social evils that have crept up. And willy-nilly, it is the police which is expected to resolve them. In the absence of specific laws about that will curb it or to prevent it, the only thing that is available to, or not the only thing, but probably the most, easily top of the mind available thing for the police is the use of 144. As I said, this is stretching the limits of 144 too far. And I really hope that legislation of some kind would be passed so that these social evils are tackled in a more legal manner and also in a more scientific and concerted manner rather than these one-off attempts by what I would call overzealous police officers who have the public good in mind, but they are ready to cut corners on the legal side.
Right. And to take that point further, now we know that the government is actually re-examining the criminal laws and criminal procedure code of the country. So they might come out with a new one in the coming months. So in fact, the study's authors recommend that, it is time that we revisit and redraft this provision of Section 144, because just the text of it, which I had read out at the beginning of this podcast, it's very broad, it's very vague. It could mean anything and everything. And police have used it in that manner, at least in Delhi. So to prevent 144 from becoming a micro-level governance tool and change its character to what it is meant to be, which is, emergency order, which can be used to tackle instances of public order disturbance or to maintain public tranquility. So if we were to achieve that, do you agree that, first of all, we need to revisit and redraft this provision? And if so, how do you think a new 144 should look like?
You see, governance is always, or rather, law enforcement is always a very dynamic thing, and to draft something very, very tight as far as the legal provisions are concerned may not be the best thing, because there will be conditions or circumstances which are totally, new, unique, and do not fit with the, you know, letter and spirit, not letter, not the spirit, but the letter of the draft. So the need for and necessity of section like 144, which will take into account, which has enough elbow room for the law enforcement agencies to handle unforeseen, unique circumstances. Definitely there's a need for this. And I think section 144, as it stands today, I would not tinker with it. But what I would definitely do is that within the police departments across the country, SOPs and directions would be issued, which would show that it is not used in a routine manner, that it is not used to curb or to tackle social evils and social disorders and social problems, because that is not really the domain of the police department. If the police department were to concentrate on ensuring order within the provisions of law, and law and order continues to be the priority for them rather than going to the social aspects of things, and then I think the misuse of Section 144 would also be substantially curbed.
Right, but don't you think the text of the law itself somehow enables this kind of egregious use of the section? Because unless we change those broad wordings, it again, as you said, of course, it is important to have some legroom for wider interpretation, because while drafting the law, you cannot foresee all the kind of situations which it would fit in. But the kind of section 144 that we have today, do you think just by improving SOPs and just by improving or making the procedural safeguards within 144 more forceful, do you think we'll be able to achieve an objective of balancing civil liberties and public order?
Frankly, I think so, because if you have certain guidelines which are mandatory on the police officers, and obviously there's an element of accountability, then things will definitely improve. And I would believe that making a provision like 144 very tight, without any elbow room for the police authorities to handle, as I said, unforeseen, unique circumstances, may not be the best way forward. But better exercise of discretion definitely can be built into Section 144.
Right. And I think one of the first things that the police can start with is, you know, essentially publishing these orders online. I mean, in today's day and age, that takes no effort. And that will at least ensure that these researchers point out how hard it was to get hold of these orders, because a lot of police stations refused to provide it under RTI. They did not give soft copies. They in fact asked them to come visit the station and inspect them and so on, which I don't think should be the case either, right? Because essentially these orders can be easily made available to the public.
Yes, I think that is a provision, that is a requirement of law, and the police should not be shy of sharing it or of making it public in a manner where the public at large has reasonable opportunity of being made aware of it. That is a provision that obviously no one should oppose.
Right. And maybe that would be the good starting point, because I do hope more such studies are conducted across different cities and states of India, because that will give a glimpse into how Section 144 is affecting all our lives today. But thank you so much, Mr. Ahmed, for joining me on this show. And thank you for such a good discussion.
Yeah, thank you, Shri. This is a very interesting topic that we chose today, because civil rights obviously is important, and it is sacrosanct for each one of us, and law enforcement must realize that while public order and law and order is important, equally important is the safeguarding of the civil liberties and the civil rights that the citizen has in this country. Thank you very much.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst or our website takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week. Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.